One day my mother came to pick me up, and I went home another way to avoid her. Which caused a great deal of concern and consternation in our family. And I heard a lot about this when I got home. But that was the end of her walking me to school. So at least it accomplished its objective. It's funny, I haven't thought about these things for years. And, you know, all of a sudden I can visualize the whole thing.
What about, you want to talk about junior high or high school?
Okay.
Did they have a separate junior high?
Oh, yes. Yes, junior high was 7, 8, and 9.
What was the name of it?
It was just a junior high school. It was on Penny Street, P-I-N-N-E-Y.
P?
P-I-N-N-E-Y. And that was quite a long distance from home. It probably took, it might have taken as much as 25 minutes if you just walked. So to have a little more than an hour for lunch, to go home, and to eat, and to come back again, is quite a chore. So half of that was running. And there was one fellow whose family owned the local lumber yard, and he was always picked up by truck. It was a little pickup truck. And so I used to ride with them, at least to get home often. And that involved clambering up into the back of this open-air wagon, but it certainly beat trying to run back and forth for lunch, at any rate. So junior high was kind of interesting, and I was one of my class officers. I forget which one. I think I was president of one of my classes. And for the first time, I was introduced to serious history. And the history teacher, a very nice gentleman, who was also an old lady, Alton Kidd, was a very earnest teacher. And we became friendly to the extent that you can become friendly with your junior high school teacher. And he got me connected with the debate team, so by the time I was in ninth grade, I was running up to the high school to attend debate class. And that was another run, because it was quite a distance up a very steep hill between junior high and high school.
That's your aerobic conditioning when you're like black.
really put good legs on me.
What was the high school name?
Just Rochester High School. So at any rate, I began to go to debate tournaments with the debate team. And a year or two later, we won the county championship when I was in high school. And by that time, I think I was a junior. That was my third year of debate. And after that, I've had it. 3 years was enough of debate. The debate coach, who was also my French teacher, pleaded with me to come back in my senior year, but I just had other fish to fry, and enough was enough. And besides that, my debate partner, who was also my very dearest girlfriend, graduated because she was a year older than I was. So the incentive to continue was small. At any rate, the high school days were a lot of fun. And I was a sports writer for the high school paper, and I was on the yearbook staff. And I was instrumental in founding a student council in high school. And that was kind of interesting because Ambridge had a student council and we didn't. So a young lady, Dorothy Swanson, and I were tapped to go up and sit in on their student council and find out what they did and how they operated. And we did. We came back and we reported to the school at large in an assembly at the Pomar Auditorium about what we learned. And then we proceeded to have an election. And it was very embarrassing because I was elected to student council and the girl was not. But at any rate, student council meetings were very interesting. And it gave us a chance to air things with some of our teachers. And the advisor for student council was another old lady who was just marvelous. Her name was Lulu Witherow, and she was the...
What was her name?
Lulu, U-L-U, Witherow, W-I-T-H-E-R-O-W. And she was also the English teacher. And she had very strict notions of what behavior, and these weren't disciplinary particularly. They were how one should conduct one's life, and you know they were very good. They were. She was an excellent influence, and I remember being at loggerheads with her all the time in our student council meetings, and she was a very great backboard to play off of. And just as an indication of what we thought of her, after all that fighting, when we finally graduated high school, we had a party where we all went out on the town. There were about six of us. And we invited Lulu along.
Could I interrupt?
Sure.
Oh, from the beginning, describe the religious circumstance and content of your house and the city.
Well, starting
and your association with it, if any.
Well, starting with the city, we had a small shul. And the downstairs was kind of a social hall, and the upstairs was the...
What was the name?
Tree of Life Synagogue. And I would have a difficult time guessing how many families, but... maybe 30 families was somewhere in the ballpark. But the 30 families were not all from Rochester. They were from Beaver, some of the neighboring towns. And when I was in high school, for instance, there was only one other Jewish person in my grade, the young lady, Zelda Grossman, who now lives in Newcastle. And the year ahead of me was Leonard Lindegrad, I don't want a diversion to that. Leonard Lindegrad was a rabbi in Eastport until he retired. And we were friendly as youngsters. And I can't remember any other Jewish kids in my high school at the time I was there.
Did you encounter any anti-Semitism at that time?
I don't recall ever being conscious of it from first-hand experience in my school days. I know my parents talked about it, but I didn't encounter anything that I could say with sober anti-Semitism. After all, why should they dislike Jews? There weren't hardly any of them to see. The shul was not particularly active. We were 3 day a year people, two on Rosh Hashanah and one on Yom Kippur. I don't recall ever hearing Kol Nidre when I was a boy because we were were always so late getting started, and it was a long walk to Shul, but by the time we got there, Kalmudra was always over, so I heard it really for the first time when I left home at some point. So we were not particularly active at the synagogue. My Uncle David was one of the people they always called on for a minyan when they were short of minyan, which was almost all the time. And so the Jewish community as a religious community was not particularly active. My grandmother, my father's mother, was religious in the extreme. And her idea of religion, I guess, was the old world Orthodox, with interpretations on all of the prohibitions in the most extreme ways. And of course everybody had to be kosher, and of course they had their own rules about kosher, and I'm sure their rules were stricter than anybody else's rules.
This was your grandmother. What about your mom? Did you keep kosher?
Well, my mother kept kosher to the rules of my grandmother. The whole family operated to the rules of my grandmother. So we had kosher, and the house was always
good. Where did you get kosher stuff?
Oh, that was a problem, because there wasn't any place in Rochester. The nearest place was Beaver Falls, which was 6 miles away. And 6 miles away meant taking a streetcar and changing and taking a bus. And later, when there were people who weren't working who could drive, like me or my cousin, to take my mother and my aunt and my grandmother to Beaver Falls, and they would buy a chicken at Trove's, take it across the street to be shepherded.
You mean you had to buy it alive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the kosher meat all came from there. And our meat was all koshered by washing all the blood out of it and salting it, and I never found out that a steak could taste good until I left home.
Why, I thought that the kosher butchers do that.
No, not
no,
that.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. My mother did that.
Mm-hmm. That's recent.
Later.
Yeah. Huh? That was in the days of prepared foods already.
What about you or Bar Mitzvah? Well, this synagogue then, was it Orthodox?
Oh, it was Orthodox. There wasn't anything but Orthodox. I mean, that was it. In a small town. After all, almost all the families in the small town were immigrant families. And the only first generation people were the youngsters of those people. All the people that I can remember being prominent, that I can remember as the adult congregation, were all immigrants.
Did you go to Sunday school?
When it came time for my cousin to be Bar Mitzvah, there wasn't any rabbi in town, of course. Mm-hmm. So, my cousin and another boy who was his age, Marvin Barnett, had to be trained for Bar Mitzvah. So they met in our house, and the rabbi came, journeyed to our house, and I forget where he came from, but he didn't live in Rochester. And he taught them for Bar Mitzvah. So I kind of strung along and got a little bit of this kind of learning. And when it came time for my Bar Mitzvah, I used to have to go to Beaver Falls, and again, that involved taking a streetcar from Rochester to Junction, and at Junction you picked up a bus, and then you went to Beaver Falls.
Which was a ferry.
I remember a dime or a quarter or something like that. Maybe it wasn't even that high. I'm trying to think how I worked this in with school. It wasn't all that easy. And then, of course, turning around and coming home from that. Now, Jewish education in those days were the Aleph Bet, and reading a little bit of Hebrew, and knowing the translation of about 3 words, certainly no more than 12. And learning to chant some of the prayers. That was it. And for Bar Mitzvah, we didn't write our own speeches. We had written speeches handed to us to learn and to spout forth. So needless to say, Bar Mitzvah was not an edifying experience in any way. In fact, none of these experiences were particularly edifying. And because the difficulty of maintaining Jewishness to the dictates of my grandmother were so distasteful and difficult and illogical, I just turned against the whole thing. After all, my mother was quite sickly, and to put her through all of this for all of these legalistics just didn't quite make sense. I couldn't believe there was a God up there who really took this stuff seriously.
There was no Jewish community in us. I said little Jewish community in Mountain, right?
That's right, there wasn't. And the only young people's organization, I guess AZA, really centered around Beaver Falls and places like that. And by the time I was old enough to drive and get myself to places like that, I was off to college and doing different things. So that really didn't connect.
So what did you do for fun and recreation in high school? What kind of activities did you do?
Well, one thing I fell in love with was tennis. Everything was fairly long distances, and everything was always uphill. Nothing was ever downhill. Everything was uphill. So practically at the other end of town, the extreme end of town from where we lived, was the football field, and playground, and tennis courts, clay tennis courts, which were never in reasonable shape. But at any rate, I began to haunt the tennis courts. And there was no such thing as lessons. If you were lucky, somebody showed you something that they did once. And so we grew up enjoying it, and enjoying the company, enjoying the game. We were very poor players. By the way, that obtains to this day.
Were there any high school teams?
Well, of course, sports was a big thing in the Valley, and the football team was a big deal.
Not tennis.
No, there were no tennis teams. And basketball was a second best. And I played some intramural basketball. Helped out at the basketball games at the varsity games. And we had a lot of high school dances and various social affairs. I can't remember outstanding things particularly. from it, but it was just a very happy time. And for years, when I went back to reunions, I found that I remembered people very well, and they remembered me. And we enjoyed getting together and picking up on these incompleted stories.
Let me ask you, do you remember any Jewish affairs of any sort, like people, Holocaust discussion or memory, or was there any rabbi by name, any event? You've talked about your religious thing so far, but anything Jewish at all you recall?
Let me tell you that all through high school, there was no rabbi in the community.
Yeah.
And let's see, I graduated high school in 1942, and nobody knew anything about Holocaust.
Well, 42 was the point, yeah, that, yeah, right.
Nobody knew anything about it.
Right, that was too early.
So that was not an issue. Charity was a different thing.
Yeah, that's go ahead.
One of my mother's favorite charities, numerous checks have been to it was something for Jewish orphans,
mm-hmm.
and I can't remember the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of those.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Tuberculosis.
And of course, there were contributions to Temple. To Temple.
Yeshivas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeshivas.
Mm-hmm. Not just yeshivas, it was just enough to keep our little synagogue going. Just to keep a small synagogue going with a few families. And some of them indigent of that. Was not a small thing, and my school days, particularly my grade school days. Well, actually, you know, the Depression was going on. We only began to come out of the Depression in 1939,
mm-hmm.
and I graduated
42.
Yeah, high school in 1942.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember all kinds of people coming to the back porch, you know, hobos.
Mm-hmm.
Who were down on their luck, and I remember them being fed one after another after another on the back porch. I remember in grade school, we were certainly by no means rich, but we were eating. And one of my teachers that I had for homeroom teacher for the last three years in grade school used to take me aside and ask whether if there was any clothing that I had that I could bring in to clothe some of the kids that were in school. And I remember bringing in some clothing. And I remember one fellow, James McNear, who had big holes in his shoes, newspapers stuffed in them, and that's how he came to school in winter and in the snow. So, times were hard. My father, in his store, would sometimes come home and say, well, I took in a dollar today. And he would be in the store from 8 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock at night. And he said, that didn't quite pay for the lights. So, there wasn't a great deal of spare change floating around.
Did you know you were going to go to college?
Never doubted it.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, I always enjoyed school. And I enjoyed all the things about school. And I was always very curious, and I still am. That's been one of the great blessings of my life, my curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly get an impressive professional career. I just read your...
Okay, that's enough.
Well, let's talk about your college years.
Okay. What year?
1942.
I graduated high school in 1942. And, of course, the war had been going on. And I wasn't sure how. I wanted to get as far in college as I could before leaving for service. So I started to school in the summer of 1942. And in fact, I went for 2 years straight.
Went
to the University of Pittsburgh. I'll backtrack on that for a moment. But at any rate, I went for 2 years straight, and then I went into the Army. When I came back from the Army, I had to repeat a little bit because they had changed requirements. And so I spent another 9 months. So in 2 years and 9 months, I finished my college.
You finished your four-year curriculum in 2 years and 9 months?
Yes. When it came time to choose, when it came time to choose a career,
let me backtrack a little bit. What you were in the Army? What did you do in the Army? Where were you? And did you go overseas?
I never went overseas. Do you want to cover college or do you want to cover that?
All right, we'll finish the college first.
In high school, I was outstanding in math and science. In fact, I got a medal for that. I think I graduated either second or third in my class. And I was very much taken. We had a math teacher who was superb. Mr. Farley. He was not an old but he was really college caliber. He was great. Then we had chemistry and physics teachers who were more mundane but also quite good. And I got a lot out of them. And I had no idea in the world what I wanted to do, and I decided to do it. You know, I was faced with all of these choices. I thought of law. My debate tempted me. And then I decided that law was kind of dry and dusty, and I didn't really care for that idea too much. And I loved chemistry, but my idea of chemists was they hid in the back room somewhere and did funny things in the laboratory. And I liked being with people more, so this led me into engineering. At any rate, the country still wasn't really wholly out of the Depression. Things weren't all that great at home financially to go to really top schools away from home. So I decided to go to a local school, and the best one available to me, I thought, was Pitt. And Pitt had an interview scholarship where I didn't know much about how to get help or any of that sort of thing, but they sent around the registrar from the University of Pittsburgh who interviewed eligible people and then awarded a partial scholarship. And this fellow Quick came around and interviewed, and I think there were either two or three of us. And he came back and wrote a letter to the principal saying that I was the choice, but there weren't enough people to choose among, so therefore they weren't going to award the scholarship. So I started to Pitt in the summer. It was a very hot summer, and I was commuting. I lived at home, again, the expense thing, and I rode a train into Pittsburgh every morning and rode a train back. And when you got into Pittsburgh, you got off at Northside, Federal Street, and you took a streetcar from Federal Street to Rosenbaum's. Then you changed streetcars and took another streetcar to Fifth Avenue. So I took a 7:32 train out of Pittsburgh, out of Rochester in the morning, and I got to a first hour class that started 20 to 9. And usually I was 5 minutes late to class. But the connections weren't bad, all things considered. At any rate, at the end of my first semester, I had all A's, and so I went to the registrar and I said, okay, here's my blueprint. And how do I get the scholarship? I said, okay. So I had that scholarship until I went off to the Army. Of course, when I came back, I was under the GI Bill of Rights. My undergraduate work didn't allow time for very much. I know when I was commuting by train, I would get home about 7 o'clock in the evening and have dinner and listen to Fred Waring and then start on homework, which would sometimes last till, depending on what it was, could last anywhere from 1 to 3 o'clock in the morning. That's when I learned to eat a good breakfast because I really needed it to keep going. And then back to school again. We had these long and ridiculous labs. But at any rate, that was part of the curriculum. And there wasn't time for any electives, really. I think the only elective I had in my 4 years was ROTC, or physical education. And I took ROTC.